Kristoffer Columbus korsade Atlanten i jakt på guld, ära och berömmelse. Men fann aldrig sitt riktiga mål.
Första resan, det var väl någon enstaka skärmytsling som man hade. Andra resan, då vet han att det här är svaga motståndare. Det här är råa busar.
Hör hela dokumentären om Kristoffer Columbus med historikern Dick Harrison i podden Historien om.
Is there anything you need me to clarify? Anything you want to ask me before we get started? Or
I just would like to know more about your show.
For sure. Yeah. We've had the Swedish version of the podcast for a little bit more than 2 years. And now we're launching an international version of the same concept. So we've been doing the work, but only for the Swedish audience for a little bit more than 2 years. And the reason we started the podcast was that we wanted to use the long form conversation and I would say a really like radically curious type of long form conversation to explore what life is, what existence is, what humanity is. And to be able to do that, we need to have conversations with a lot of different people who have a lot of different and a variety of experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So what we sought out to do was to find those people and find the diversity of those ideas and thoughts. So we've been talking to, we've been talking to sex workers, to priests, to cannabis advocates, to people from the right, to the left. And everyone has a story to tell, and all these stories are pieces of the puzzle that finally might give us a more clear understanding of what we're doing here.
Right.
So that's the whole concept and the focus of the podcast is basically being curious enough in a long form conversation to explore humanity.
It sounds very interesting. And then putting all those together and realizing that there's literally so many different types of people,
mm-hmm.
and so many different stories. To me, it seems like impossible to get the full puzzle together.
For sure. I mean, it is impossible. But I also think that the journey itself could possibly help us to get a fuller version.
Yeah.
Or a richer version than we have now.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that's the whole purpose of the podcast. I'm sure we won't finalize it, but I bet we could get more clarity on the way.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited. I want to know what your questions are and see if I can give you some good answers.
Perfect. So I would also like to encourage you to see this as an opportunity to have a conversation and not only like a basic interview. So if you want to ask me questions back, please do. If you're curious or want me to clarify something about myself or what I just said, please do.
Well, I already know what question I want to ask.
All right, so let's get to it.
All right.
So first of all, I don't want to make any assumptions that all of our listeners know what the Amish culture is about. So could you just give us a little bit more context? If someone's listening right now that doesn't even know what Amish is, how would you describe it?
I would describe Amish as a form of a cult. It's a man-made religion, and they have their own set of rules. They live in the United States, but they keep to themselves. They mostly live out in the country, and they do all the farming and provide for themselves. And then they have their own church and their own schools. And they're very secluded from the outside world. Like they don't want, even though they live in the United States, they keep away from all of that.
And what would you say in your own words is the whole purpose of the culture or the cult? What's the aim?
They aim to get into heaven by doing works. That is their purpose. They believe that because their ancestors, they're Swiss and Irish mainly, Amish are. So they claim that they can't break away from those traditions because of the ancestors. And if they do, like for myself, since I left, they tell me that I am going to hell. They don't believe that I will get into heaven, but they will because they're living that lifestyle. And if anyone breaks away from that, then they're automatically not going to get into heaven.
Right. And the other members of this of the community are not supposed to talk to the ones who get away, right?
No. I remember when I was still Amish, some of my cousins had left the community, but they were still hanging around the Amish community there. And I got caught talking to one of them one time. And I literally feared for my life. I thought my dad was just going to lock me in the basement. He did not like it that I was talking to a cousin that had left the community. And it was scary getting caught talking to somebody and then worrying about, or I was thinking I really did something bad. Like, that is so horrible. What's going on with me? What's going to happen to me? Is God going to punish me for talking to a cousin of mine that was no longer Amish? And nowadays, they have accepted it a little bit more. Like, I'll go home and visit my brothers and sisters. They'll let me in the house. They'll talk to me. And but anybody that is like related to me but hasn't really associated with me in the last 10 years, they would very much shy away from me if I were to go try to talk to them. So it's immediate family members that will talk to me, but I know that they're always scared of judgment from the elders in the church.
So your parents still talk to you as well?
Yeah, my dad doesn't, but my mom does if she sees me. My dad just has a different view of me, and he told me not to come back on his property unless I'm dressed Amish and come up there to see him by bus, with the bus, instead of flying up there and renting a car. He didn't want me to do that. So he told me to dress Amish, and I had tried that the first few years after I left. I tried to do exactly what they wanted me to do in order to visit them, which the requirement was that I had to dress Amish for the time that I was at their house. So I did that, and I would stay overnight. And then all of a sudden they told me I can't stay overnight anymore, but I still had to dress Amish. They just felt like by me spending that much time there that I was only doing it for my benefit. Like, I had homesickness, so I would come back and stay for a little bit and then leave. And I would leave them heartbroken all over again. And that wasn't my intention. I was trying to rebuild a relationship with them, but they didn't see it that way. So finally, they just made it so difficult for me, even if I was dressing Amish. So I stopped dressing Amish, and I told them that they keep changing their rules, and there's so many different things that they want from me, and I try to do it, and then there's still something wrong. So I just kind of backed away, and when the last time I visited at my parents' house, I didn't dress Amish at all. And I drove up there with a rental car. And after I got home, back home to Texas, they live in Maine now and I live in Texas. So when I got back to Texas, I got a letter from my dad and he basically told me not to come back unless I was planning on dressing Amish, getting there by bus, not a rental car, and they would pick me up with their horse and buggy at the bus station, and I would have to conform to the Amish way of living while I was visiting there. And I thought about it. You know, that's the respectful way to do it, to dress Amish, but it's just, I just know that it's never enough. And why should I continue to conform to their ways when they are not even trying to accept me for who I am? Mm. So, I mean, it was really tough. And now I haven't seen my mom or my dad in 4 or 5 years because of that.
And do you still keep contact with your siblings?
I do, a few of them. There's a few of my siblings, especially my older brother, who has taken on my dad's ways a lot. And he's unhappy with me. He tells me that he doesn't think I'm a Christian, which it's not his place to judge. And he tells me that I am going to go to hell if I don't come back to the Amish. And there's just so much disagreement with him that I did not go back. I haven't tried to visit him in the same amount of years. I think it's been 5 years since I've seen him. But then there's younger sisters, and there's one brother that does accept me. They very much like when I do come visit. And when I do visit, they do inquire about my life a little bit, but they mainly keep it. They talk about what they're doing and what's happening in the community and things like that.
Right. So I would like to go back and try to get to know Emma during your upbringing and how it was for you before you left. So do you remember what's your first memory of, basically life? what's the first thing you remember and how was it growing up there?
Well, the first memory that I just find it so fascinating was, we were living in Ohio at the time, and I was 4 or 5 years old, and I remember my oldest brother going to school. The schoolhouse was about a mile down the road from where we lived, maybe less than a mile, but somewhere in that range. And I desperately wanted to go to school. But since I was only 5 years old, I wasn't quite old enough yet. But my mom was tired of me begging to go to school. So she would, after my brother left, she would send me to school by myself. She would pack a little lunch and I would run down the road to this little white Amish schoolhouse. And the teacher would have a special spot for people like, for little girls like me that weren't old enough yet. And they would give me coloring books and things to do while I was there. But I loved going to school. And now I find it very terrifying that I was allowed to go down the highway by myself where there's traffic at 5 years old. Like, who does that? But I remember after I was old enough to go to school, I remember liking it. I loved learning. But there's something about the Amish community, they look down on people who enjoy school. Like, you're not supposed to like it. If they would find out that I like it, like in my 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, they would make fun of me and kind of bully me and saying, why would you like school, or just making fun of me. So I always hid the fact that I liked school.
So what is it? Was it only the kids or the grown-ups as well?
Both. Yeah. Like, nobody thought that anybody would like school. And it was only, our education level was only to 8th grade, and then we're done. So I was 14 years old when I was done with school. And then from that point forward, I was always at home working, making an income for my parents.
And what did you learn at school?
We learned how to spell words. We learned how to, and when I say spell words, it was both English and German.
Right.
We had English classes twice a week, and then German classes 3 times a week.
So how come German?
German is their, well, actually I should say Dutch. They call it Pennsylvania Dutch.
Yeah.
But I can understand German people more than I can understand Dutch people. So I think there's a mixture of German and Dutch in their language, but that's what they taught in the schools. And we were not allowed to speak English, even though we had to learn it. We couldn't speak. We can use it at home. In school, maybe every once in a while, the teacher would say, okay, for this many hours, you have to use the English language. So that's what we learned. I wish I would still know how to make the German letters, because it was a high German. It's kind of like, it looks like art when you write it out. So we also had math, which was very basic. I had never seen letters mixed with numbers to come up with a math problem. And then we did a lot of reading. And
what kind of books did you read? Remember?
I don't know what kind of books they call them. I don't know what kind of books you would call those. They were not the normal books that kids would read at home. They were school books, but they had stories, and I can't really remember what type of stories they were. They weren't very hard. And it wasn't that we would read in order to get to know the story. We would read to learn how to read. Like, just sit there and read the book and you have no clue what it says or what it means, but they weren't teaching us to learn what a story means. They were teaching us how to read.
Right. So at 14 years old, you stopped going to school and did what?
My parents at that time started a basket making business. So I was in the shop cutting out the boards and nailing posts on the board and then weaving it with reed. And then we would take those baskets and sell them at a corner at a gas station. Like, sit there with our horse and buggy and put out all the baskets on the side. And then, that's how we made our income.
And you sold it to people outside the community, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And how was it to interact with people outside the community when you were still in?
It was hard. The memories that I have, some were good interesting people, but I never would really talk to them. Mm. For number one, it was hard for me to speak English. And I just felt so different. And wearing the Amish clothes, like we had to wear the bonnets that come out. I don't know if you've probably seen pictures. We had a cap. The women wear a cap and then on top of that, a bonnet to be outside.
Yeah.
So there are so many times that people from the outside would laugh at me, make jokes, make me feel very ashamed of being dressed like that. And I was very insecure and I hated it. Like I absolutely hated being dressed Amish because I didn't want people to make fun of me. Hmm.
And was it always like that? I mean, did you always feel like I shouldn't be here, or I'm not supposed to dress like this? Did you always feel like that was something wrong?
Yes, from a very young age. I don't think I fully understood it until I was about 15 years old. I just had this emptiness, like an empty, I don't belong here feeling. And I couldn't really make any friends. And there's a lot of cliques in the Amish, like the girls their own age would stick together during church service or on Sundays. On Sundays was mainly our day to relax and or go see friends if we wanted to. Mm. But to go see friends, you had to hitch up horse and buggy and drive 5 to 10 to 12 miles down the road, and that takes several hours. So I didn't really go see friends, and I always felt like they looked so happy, so like they had something to look forward to in life, and me, I felt so alone and wondering what's wrong with me. Why do I feel like I am the black sheep of the family? That was at 15 years old. So, and I was a little bit more of a rebel, but that was because I was searching for something and I didn't know which way to go, what to do. And one day, have you read my book?
I've read parts of it, yes.
So I don't want to give it away completely, but the first chapter I wrote about this little ride that I went on in a vehicle. Mm-hmm. Basically, me and my siblings took a truck from on top of the hill. It was in a field. We took it for a ride. And during that time, I really wanted to leave the Amish, and I just blurted out to one of my sisters that I wanted to leave. And that was kind of the starting moment for me to realize, wow, I just said that out loud to somebody else. And I think I'm going to go ahead and try this. I'm going to see. During that trip is when I really decided I should just look into it and see if I can get away. During that time, I was cleaning a house for the neighbor lady across the street. She was not Amish. And I hardly ever talked to her, but she would ask me questions and I would say yes or no, or, you know, whatever words I could say to her. And I remember her asking me if I was ever going to leave the Amish, and I told her yes. And she said, okay, I'll help you. Like, she was so willing to help me. And we never really discussed it from there because I was only around 15, 16 years old. And I knew I had to be 18. So I thought that that was my ticket out, and I was trying to, in my head, build a scenario of how I can go to her house and stay there when I'm 18 years old without my family coming across the street and taking me back home. And I had determined that she probably would have to take me to some other state for me to live. But then right before I turned 17 years old, she suddenly died of a heart attack.
Oh.
And I was devastated. I thought, how am I going to get out now? I have no other, there's nobody else that I can trust with knowing this information that I wanted to leave. And those few years that I was thinking about and planning and trying to decide if that's how I'm going to do it, because Amish women are so secluded. There's not very many options for them to talk about to other people about how to do something. And leaving the Amish back then was still very rare, and especially rare for women to leave. I had known only one other woman that had left before me. So it was terrifying, and I couldn't tell anybody except one of my sisters knew, but she didn't really believe that I was seriously going to leave. And so after she died, I came across a couple that was coming from, they would come to my parents' place to visit, and they were very close to my parents. So I wasn't sure if I could tell them that I wanted to leave, but I decided to take that risk. And I told them one day very quickly that I wanted to leave the Amish, and they immediately said, oh, you can't do that because your parents had already told us that if any of their kids come to them and want to leave the Amish, they want to know about it.
Mm.
And with me, I couldn't express, I couldn't verbally express, and I couldn't really show how terrified I was of them actually telling my parents. Because growing up, they don't teach Amish kids how to show emotion, and they teach them that it's not okay to show emotion. So I had suppressed emotions, and I couldn't verbally get it out what I needed to say to these people to not tell my parents. So I just kind of left it, and I was expecting any minute my dad becoming very angry and coming at me for wanting to leave Amish. Like every morning I would wake up with this expectation of my dad finding out, and it's going to be the end. Like there won't be any more planning. I'll probably live in the basement the rest of my life. I probably won't ever be able to leave the property without one of my parents with me. But it never happened. And several months had gone by, and I was like, okay, maybe my parents don't know. And one day I was out in the barn, and this couple came, and they brought some horse feet for their horse. They drove up to the barn. They saw me. They had a phone number written down on a piece of paper, and they asked me to come over to them where they were unloading, and they stuck this piece of paper in my hand and said, when you're ready to leave, call that number, and we can't know about it. So I stuck that piece of paper in my pocket, and I went on about my way. And they later told me that they had decided not to tell my parents because they could see how manipulative and verbally and mentally abusive my dad was to us kids and our mom. So they had some disagreements about how he presented himself, so they decided not to tell him. And even though they didn't tell me who this person was that I was supposedly gonna call, and I had some kind of relief, like, okay, I have a phone number. I was hiding a cell phone that somebody else had given me, and I didn't use it. It was a very old school track phone from Walmart. And I wouldn't use it because I didn't want to run down the battery before, you know, I leave. I could. There was no way to charge it because we don't have electricity. So I was hiding it in the bedroom, and hiding a cell phone in my bedroom was the most terrifying thing. I was so scared somebody would find that phone. Like, nothing in my room was safe. Like, any minute my dad would just walk in. He wouldn't knock. He would just come upstairs, walk in to see what we were doing. It was very, I think it shouldn't be allowed that a parent does that, but what do I know? I'm not a parent. I probably wouldn't know what to do.
So what were your parents ever physically violent and abusive as well?
I don't know. Yes and no. Like, my mom wasn't, but my dad was. He would call it more of like a punishment. He wouldn't. I can remember some physical violence, but not enough to picture it and or like put it together and know for sure, because I know that I've been hit with, I've gotten whippings before, or whippings, whatever you call it, but I think that is part of raising children in the Amish community. Like, that is expected. Like, if you don't behave, you're going to get a whooping. I feel like he abused my mom, and I can't tell for sure if he was physically abusive, but she was crying a lot during my childhood. She would cry and cry and cry all the time. And I knew that it was because of my dad, but I didn't know why. I wouldn't ask her why, because I knew she wouldn't tell me. She just kind of kept silent and did the best she could. But it was very hard for her to see that she was crying. And my dad and I had a lot of issues. So my relationship with my dad was very strained, and I was so ready to get out of that. He was manipulative, controlling. He wouldn't work. He expected his kids to do all the work for him and bring in the income. And the same, like, he expected my mom to do the work too. So he was the only one that was kind of just sitting around smoking his pipe, and yeah, he was more concerned about himself than he was to make sure that us kids didn't go hungry. Or I remember many times during the winter time we didn't have any food, but yet he had money to go buy cigarettes or cigars or tobacco for his pipe. And so, and he would often yell at us kids, especially me. He would tell me that I'm worthless and good for nothing, and that I'm stupid, all kinds of terrible things that you should never say to a child. He would say those things to me, and it had really affected my life. Even after I left Amish, and once I learned how to deal with my past and try and heal from it, there's so much emotion that came out of me. It's taken years for me to heal and know that it's okay to become the person that I was supposed to be and not constantly be scared that I'm doing something wrong. I used to try to please people and still worry that I wasn't good enough. Mm. And that has gotten me in some big trouble.
I can imagine. I mean, I'm so happy you're out. I'm so happy you're not living under those conditions anymore. And
yeah.
And I would really love to hear about how you got out. I mean, how was that day for you when you actually got out?
That day still seems like just something that you would watch in a movie, and it's not real. After I got that phone number from those people, I had, I don't remember if I had that phone number already or if it was right before. There was at one point that I had decided, it was when I was 17, I had decided that I was not going to leave the Amish, that it's too stressful. It was putting a huge strain on me. I was getting very thin. I was pale. I wasn't eating. I was in constant pain. I had a headache all day, every day. So I decided, okay, I'm not going to leave. And I'm going to try to be this ladylike Amish person and do what I'm supposed to do, which is get a boyfriend, get baptized, get married, and have kids by the time I'm 19.
And just to clarify, I mean, how did they expect you to get a boyfriend? What was the ritual around that part?
That's a long story. So they would, once you're 16 and a half, you're allowed to start dating. So on Sundays at church, after dark, probably around 7 or 8, is when all the young people around that are 16 and a half, and I don't know why they have to throw in that half mark, but from 16 and a half to 18, 19, 20, however old you are and not married, they would all get together, the guys and the girls, and they would sit around a table and sing hymns in German. And then after you're done singing, the guys would try to match up the girls with, let's say they pick out a guy and they say, okay, we want you to go on a date with Emma. Mm. And then they would come to me and say, we have this guy, we think you should date him. And they would kind of, they would insist on me, like I am supposed to say yes. So at this point, the guy would take me home. We weren't allowed to go on an actual date. I didn't know what that was until I left Amish, but their date was to take the girl home that evening from the singing and go upstairs to her room and either talk or go to sleep. That was considered the date. And the guy would get up around 4 or 5 in the morning let's say we get home at 12 midnight, we have 4 hours to talk and sleep before the guy has to get up and get out of the house before the family starts waking up.
Right. But the family knows.
No. Well, the parents, I mean, I'm sure the parents know because they know that that's how their dating rules are.
Right.
So the parents know that somebody's there.
But out of respect, you should still leave before they wake up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the guy isn't supposed to be seen by the rest of the family. Like, my brothers and sisters wouldn't really, they aren't supposed to know. I don't know why it's a secret, but it is. They're not. And then outside of that date, that one, they do it every 2 weeks. They would do that type of date.
Every 2 weeks.
Once, if they start the date from that night from the singing, then the next date would switch to Saturday night if they continue on dating. Then it's Saturday nights instead of Sunday. And sometimes the first dates also start from if there isn't a singing and the girl is at home in her bed, all of a sudden you get these group of guys show up knocking on your bedroom door asking you to have a date with whoever they picked out. Like, they wake you up in the middle of the night and bring this guy to your room and tell you that you're supposed to have a date.
That seems like a weird kind of Tinder to me. I mean, that's a really weird dating app. Like, a bunch of guys showing up. Well, we choose someone for you. This is the guy. And then you're supposed to either talk or sleep together for 4 hours. I mean, it's a weird game. And but what did you talk about?
I had such horrible experiences that I don't, there was nothing to talk about. I was shy. And I can't remember even saying a word to anybody. Except there was this one guy that they brought to me to have a date with him. And I had a feeling that he was going to get up and leave. Because, well, actually he did. And it was an embarrassment because as soon as the group of guys left, this guy got out of bed and left, and we didn't even have a date. And other people found out about it, like the guys that brought him to me and like the young folks who do the singings, they knew that he had left. Well, they blamed me. They thought that something was wrong with me because he did that.
Yeah.
And it was very embarrassing, and I hated how I got blamed for something that I have no clue why he left. He didn't tell me. He just left. And then a couple of months later, they brought his brother to me. And I was determined to not let this guy leave. And I said something to the effect of, you know, asking him to please not leave during the night until his time is up. That was like the only thing I ever said to somebody. Until, so, at that point where I decided that I had decided not to leave and I was gonna get married or try to get married and behave like I'm supposed to behave or be this, essentially going to make myself conform to their ways of living and like truly trying it. Well, they brought a guy over soon after I had made that decision that I was going to try and date a guy. And I was going to say yes to him no matter what because I wanted to get married. I wanted to give up leaving Damers. So he asked me to if he can continue seeing me, and I said yes. So he would come back every 2 weeks, and he would never say a word to me, and I would never say a word to him. We would just go to bed and sleep. And the next morning, he would get up and leave. This was going on for about 2 months. The only question he ever asked me was, can I come back? And me saying yes. And then during those 2 months, every time he left, the next morning, I would have the worst headache. Like, it just felt like I can't live like this. Something is wrong with me. And I hated every part of those weekends where he would show up. Like, I absolutely hated it. And here I was telling myself that I was going to marry this guy so I don't leave Amish. But after 2 months, I finally got up the nerve to tell him not to come back. And he said, okay, and left. And after I had made that decision that I was not going to have him come back, I knew that I was going to leave the Amish. Like, there was just no way else around it. I was going to have to leave because I was so unhappy. I was so lost in my life. And I knew that there was something in me that told me that it'll happen. So I just kind of sat back and continued making baskets and just keeping my eye open for a day that I could slip away. And 2 weeks after my 18th birthday, I woke up one morning and something just felt so different about that day. Like, it was almost just, I immediately knew that I was going to leave that day. And when I was making breakfast, my mom said that her and dad are going to go to town. And they were going to use horse and buggy to go. So I knew that it would be an all-day thing. And that was my way out, knowing that they weren't going to be at home. And we had Amish neighbors to a little bit south of us, which was the way that I wanted to go. But I didn't know how I was going to get by them without them seeing me leaving. And I was complicating, is that how you say it? I butchered that word. Complicating?
Completing?
No, thinking. I was...
Yeah, I know what word you're looking for. you were thinking, yeah.
Anyway, yeah. I was thinking of going through the fields that had cows and bulls and other animals in the fields in order to bypass the neighbors so that nobody would see me. And I was worried that I wouldn't be able to cross the fences or that a bull would get angry at me and come stomping at me. So I was a little stressed out about how I was going to get out now that my parents are leaving. Today has to be the day.
Contemplating.
So, contemplating.
Yes.
That's the word.
Yeah.
So about mid-morning, those neighbors that I wanted to bypass, I saw them driving by with horse and buggy. Like, they all left their house and they were driving by with horse and buggy. And I was like, oh my goodness, they left. Now I know for sure that I can just walk down the road right past them and I'll be okay. So I called the number that was on that piece of paper and that cell phone that I was hiding. I called that number and a lady answered. And I told her that I wanted to leave the Amish. And she said, okay, I've been expecting your call. Where can I pick you up? So I told her of this little bank. It was in a small town about 4 miles away from where I was living. I told her to meet me there. And that was all we said. So I wrote a little note for my parents and just told them that I wasn't happy and I need to leave and figure out my life. And I left it on the table for them to see when they get home. And I took off my white cap that I was wearing and I just put a scarf over my head because the first thing I wanted to get rid of was that white cap. I took that off and just put a scarf and I was wearing my dress and I had like $50 in cash in my pocket and this little card with my baby footprint on it that I had stolen out of my parents' desk. It was not a birth certificate because I didn't have one, but it was just a card showing that I was born at such and such time and who my parents were. And it had my footprint, my baby footprint. So I had that in my pocket and I walked down the road 4 miles and I had gone maybe about 2 miles when all of a sudden I hear this horse running up on the road and I look back and it was my brother. He noticed that I had left a note on the table and he knew immediately what was going on and he came riding up on his horse and he started begging me to come back. He said, "Please don't do this. This is going to destroy your family."
Which brother was it? Was it the one who...
No, it was not the oldest brother. It was the one younger than me, but he's also the one now that will accept me to come to his house to visit. But I remember seeing the terrified look on his face. And I just told him, "I can't go back. I'm not ready. I've barely left. I've gone 2 miles down the road. I'm not ready to turn around." And he finally gave up and he went back and I continued walking down the street and just remembering his face. And it did make me question if I'm making the right decision. Like it felt so unreal that he tried to get me back to come back before I even had left, essentially. And then being worried sick about what the rest of my family is going to do. But I continued walking, and when I got to that bank, the lady was there waiting for me. We had set a time for 2 o'clock that day. It was on January 10th. Wait, what day? Oh my goodness, today is January 10th.
Oh.
I didn't even think of that until right now. So it's been 14 years.
Exactly. Today.
Exactly 14 years. Oh, wow. She got me in her truck and she introduced herself. And it turns out that she was a former Amish person. She had left the Amish 30 years prior to me.
Mm.
And I was very, very relieved to hear that. And she asked me a couple of questions about, "Am I really sure I want to do this?" And I kept telling her, "Yes, I'm sure." And she took me to her house about 2 hours away. And that first night, I don't know if I slept or not. It just seemed like a blur. I kept thinking about my mom, about my dad, how ballistic he's going to go. And I just imagined my mom crying her eyes out. Because when they come home and find that I'm gone, it's such a... If I could have done it any other way, like I wish I could have sat down with them and talked to them and told them, that I wanted to leave the Amish, but it was, I couldn't do that because I saw how they had treated other family members that I had left before me. And I stayed there with the lady for 2 weeks. And during those 2 weeks, I did not tell my parents where I was. I did not try to reach out to them. But my parents were, especially my dad, was going all over the place to people that he thought might have, that he would accuse people of kidnapping me. Mm. And he would threaten that he was going to call the police and do all kinds of things. He just went crazy. He was looking for me. And I knew that if he would find me, he would take me back home against my will. So the lady I was staying with knew of people in Texas. And she asked me if I want to go visit or possibly stay there. I thought I was just going to visit because I didn't know anybody in Texas. And so they got me to Texas. And after I reached Texas, is when I wrote a letter to my parents and told them that I was in Texas and that I am doing fine. Don't worry about me, blah, blah, blah. Well, they started writing letters back to me. And I still have those letters to this day. And I should go read them since it's the anniversary. But the things that they told me was just like telling me that I was going to go to hell, that the devil got a hold of me. And I knew that before I left Amish, that that's what the Amish think, that I wasn't going to get into heaven. But my life was so miserable at being Amish that I didn't care. I was like, oh, well, if I go to hell, that's got to be better than where I was at. And I didn't really understand the magnitude of what it really means to not get into heaven. I didn't really believe in hell or, you know, I didn't know God either. So it was all fear-based. The things that they taught about God was based on trying to guilt trip you into making you believe that God was not a good person. But yet you're still supposed to follow the Amish rules because they know better, you know? They know how to get into heaven. So anyway, I just thought, well, it's fine. If I go to hell, then that's what it is. But I didn't 100% believe that that would happen to me. And, but once I had left the Amish, I began looking into the Bible more and going to church. And 2 years after that, I gave my heart to Jesus. I accepted Jesus. I realized that God is not this terrible person. God loves me and doesn't want to punish me at everything that I do wrong. I always believe that if I, like in the Amish, I would sometimes have these little battery operated radios that I was hiding. And I believed that God would punish me for having those. But then later in life, I realized once I got to know God, I realized that that is not the case. It was a big load off my shoulders, knowing that I was safe. I wasn't going to go to hell, even though to this day, they still believe that I'm not going to get into heaven. It's pointless to try and show them otherwise. If I quote Bible verses or talk about God, they tell me that I'm brainwashed.
Yeah, I mean, they're still there, right? They're still immersed in that community, surrounded with all these rules and principles and culture. And that, of course, that's a great part of their life. So when they answer you, they answer from that place, and you're somewhere mm-hmm. else. And right. now you've been living, I mean, half your life outside, almost half, no, a little bit less, right?
Yeah.
14 years. Yeah.
I was 18 when I left. So yeah.
So 14 years outside the Amish community. What I'm curious about, what was your first great shocker? Like, what was the first time you did something or saw something that actually shocked you with what do you call, I mean, the rest of society when you're in the culture, in the Amish culture? Do you have a name for that? That the outside world or the English world?
We call English, the yeah. outside world is English. Yeah. English people.
English mm-hmm. people. So what was your first shocking encounter with English people or English culture?
I would say flying on an airplane was the first ride was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. I can't believe that there's something in the U.S. that you can get on an airplane and go up in the air. And I found it very fascinating, and I was so intrigued that the first flight, I kept looking out the window, and I would see clouds, and I was so mesmerized by the fact that I was above the clouds and remembering that as a child, I would lay outside on the grass sometimes, and I would look up in the sky and think, man, if I could just reach the skies, I mean, the clouds, how amazing would that be? If I could, like, the clouds look so fluffy, like, who wouldn't want to be up in there? And I had a little bit of imagination there. Mm. And now I was on this airplane for the first time in my life. And it was really surreal realizing that I used to wish I could be that far up. And as a little girl, I never even thought of airplanes. Mm. I never thought of, I want to get on an airplane. Like that thought didn't exist. I didn't even know that people did that. I would see airplanes in the sky, but I didn't know there was actually people in there.
So what did you think about airplanes? What did you think they were before you knew?
I don't know if I even... I knew there were airplanes, but my brain didn't go that far as to think that somebody's flying it. I don't know what I was thinking. Mm. There was one time, though, that a girl that I went to school with, she told me that they had a new baby, and the baby came from an airplane. Like somebody dropped the baby from the airplane. Mm. And I wrote about that in my book. There's a chapter called Babies Come from Airplanes. Mm. But then from that point forward, after she had told me that, I really, really badly wanted a baby from an airplane. I thought that's where they come from. it doesn't make any sense now. I don't know. I don't know how I was thinking that that's possible.
I mean, after a while, you went to college as well. And how, I'm really curious about to know about how that was for you. I mean, because before you went, I suppose there was a huge gap in your knowledge about the world, right? I mean, when you went to school in the community, you didn't know who was the president of the United States. You didn't know how many states they were.
No.
Or who George Washington was, or it was a lot of things and a lot of ideas that you weren't aware of. And then you suddenly went to college. How was that for you?
That was a huge learning curve for me. And every night I was exhausted by the time I got home from college. But it just seemed like the world was, and the world was literally way bigger than I had ever imagined it. I was aware of a few states, and those states included mainly Amish people where we would go visit family, like aunts and uncles. So I knew of those states, but I don't remember. I don't have any knowledge of like imagining how big the United States was, and including the overseas. And we were always told that every country in the overseas is bad. Don't ever go there. And like the Amish would tell us that other countries, and they literally meant they meant all countries were bad people and they wanted to hurt the United States. So I always envisioned that overseas was more of a like an alien country. And another part that didn't make sense to me after I left, I learned that the world wasn't flat, that it was actually round.
Oh.
And there was just so many things that after I left that I had to learn and wrap my head around, that sometimes it felt like it was just too much information that I had to absorb.
Yeah.
And going to college, there were so many steps that I had to complete first, like getting my birth certificate and getting my social security. And then from there, I got my GED and my driver's license. Once I had that, I started working at a Dollar General store. I was a cashier. And then I was doing that while waiting to get into college. I'd already been accepted, but it was going to be a year before I could start. So during that time, it was still a learning curve for me. But once I got into college, and when the teacher gives you an assignment, says, do that for your homework, I'm like, what's homework? I didn't know. And I was very shy. I didn't know. My voice was very quiet. Like nobody could hear me even if I wanted to speak up about something. So I would always wait and talk to the teacher afterwards instead of speaking up in class if I didn't know something. And the teacher had to explain to me how to do homework and what it means. And so I would go home and I would try to study, but the information was so foreign to me. Even just if I was taking a writing class, like I was supposed to write a whole page full of a story, and I had no clue how to do that. I knew how to spell words, and I knew how to make a sentence with I knew how to make one sentence. I didn't know anything about paragraphs. I had no clue. So I had a lot of learning to do, a lot of catching up. And then the math, we had all of a sudden I was having to deal with letters and numbers mixed together. So much stuff to learn. And just the culture at college. At that point, when I started college, I still felt very insecure about myself because I felt like I still had Amish clothes on, even though I didn't. It just felt like it. If I walk into a classroom, I felt like everybody was looking at me and snickering, and they weren't, but that my mind was trained to experience that, I guess, is how you would say it, because, you know, what I've told you earlier, how I felt about being dressed Amish, it took several years for me to get over it and not feel like people can immediately see that I'm Amish or used to be Amish, and I'm not wearing a dress. I'm not wearing a fungi bonnet. So it took a little bit for me to overcome that and be more secure of who I am and not being laughed at and made fun of. And, you know, it just took a little while.
Yeah, and you made it. You graduated. You got your MBA.
Yes, I did. I got my MBA degree. So the first 4 years after I left Amish, I was in South Texas by South Padre Island. And I went to a community college there, got my associates, and then I moved 9 hours away, closer to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And I went to Tarleton State University and got my bachelor's and my master's there. Mm. And then I moved into the big city by myself.
Houston?
No. Huh? Dallas.
Dallas, right.
Between Dallas and Fort Worth.
Right.
So the college I was going to was kind of out in the country, and it was smallish, maybe 12,000 to 20,000 students. So it wasn't that big. But I used to think that I would never live in Dallas or Fort Worth. Just driving through it terrified me. And it just felt like it was so busy. Go, go, go. Mm. But then all of a sudden, I was living in the middle of the city, I'm still working for a big hospital. It's one of the largest in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And I work in their business department. And now I can't imagine not living in the city.
And how was your first date outside the community? I'm really curious.
I did not go on a date until I think I was 25. So like 7 years after I left.
Yeah.
I started dating a guy that was in the military, and he spoiled me a lot. He took me to San Antonio and took me to these fancy places, and it was thrilling. I very much enjoyed it, and that was my first dating experience.
And you both talked, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We talked.
Yeah.
Yeah. By that time, I had already started writing my book.
Mm. I mean, writing the book, I can imagine, I mean, both people outside the community reading it, but I mean, also people with the same experience as yourself. I bet a lot of people contacted you with different reasons, right? So what mm-hmm. kind of responses have you got from the book?
To this day, I still get responses. It has been way more successful and way more, it has helped a lot of people. And when I first published it in 2014, I didn't think of the magnitude that it would have on people, the effect. I was thinking that it would be maybe read by a few people in Texas. I didn't think it would ever go outside of Texas. I don't know what I was thinking. I guess I was just small-minded and didn't really. I published a book in order for my friends to read it and kind of get to know me better, to answer some questions that they had asked me, and I wanted to explain it. Mm. And some of the it was also a healing mechanism for me to write it, because it really, when you write your experience down on paper, it really gives a different perspective. And it helped me heal, because I realized that there's, even though my parents didn't like me, I don't want to say that they hated me, because hate is a strong word, so I'm not going to say that they did, but once I wrote the book, I realized that my parents were doing the best they could with what they were given. They had a lot of pressure from the elders in the community to treat me the way that they did after I left, because the community kind of shames the parents when somebody leaves. Mm. There's a lot of pressure from there, and I kind of just realized that it's not all my parents' fault. It's also the way they were raised and how, you know, it's from generation to generation.
Yeah.
So it really helped me when I wrote down some stories and reflected on that.
When I talk to my buddy Oscar here in the podcast team before I went on to do this conversation with you, we were talking about that even if there's a lot of things within the Amish community that are not, might not be compatible with modern culture, like the whole dating part or the, you know, the parents having so much control or the man having so much control over his wife or his kids and a bunch of other stuff that might not be compatible or might even be traumatic or difficult for someone growing up there. I was wondering what parts of the culture or the community that you still find useful or even valuable, or maybe even there are parts of the Amish community that we can learn from that are not bad.
There are definitely parts of it. I would say the family aspect of the three meals a day to sit at a table together, that's important to me still to this day. I do a lot of cooking, and I cook based on what I learned growing up. So I find that it's still important to incorporate that in my life. And work ethic. The Amish have a really good work ethic. And I'm a workaholic. I don't like to just sit around and do nothing. And I take my job really serious. And I think that comes from how I grew up. I started working from a very young age. And while being a child and having to work in order to make a living, that shouldn't necessarily be what I should have gone through. I should have been able to play sports and do other outside activities, but that wasn't allowed in the Amish. So, but I still feel like because of that being instilled in me that to do your job right has carried over to me now working for a company and also doing some other stuff for myself.
And how would, I didn't ask you about this before, but as I've learned about the Amish culture, when you turn 18, you get the opportunity to do a Rumspringa?
Rumspringa. That's a, Part of it is a myth. It's not really real. It's not what Hollywood has made people believe it is. There are certain Amish communities that do allow Rumspringa, but they're higher ups, like more modern, more sophisticated. But the way Rumspringa is, it's not where they tell the child to leave and do whatever you want and then come back.
Right.
that's not the case. Yes, a child does leave and does do whatever they want, but it's not as simple as that. It's not like they're encouraged and that it's okay. I think most of it is done behind the parents' backs. But in my community was called the Schwarzentruber Group. It's a hard word to pronounce, but they were the least modern. And I had never heard of Rumspringa until I had left. Like, there's no way they would accept it for their community to do that. I mean, for goodness sake, they allow dating. The way their dating is in the girl's bedroom. You're confined to the parents' house. You can't even leave to go on an actual date with somebody. So that's how strict they are.
What do you think about the future of the Amish culture? Is the community growing or is it decreasing? What do you think?
That's a hard question. There's a lot more people leaving the Amish and more older, even married couples and their kids leaving. But it might also be growing. Like, I don't know. And also, what I've noticed is that the group that I grew up in, they are progressing more, getting more more sophisticated, but they still have a long way to go. So I see a little bit more of modernization happening in the Amish,
right?
Which is a good thing, in my opinion.
Of course. And how would you describe your life right now? Do you feel at home? Is this home for you now?
Yes, I do feel at home. I just got engaged in October.
Congratulations.
And we're gonna get married in April of this year.
Nice. Wonderful.
Yeah. So that's something that I didn't know that was ever going to happen for me to get married. For a long time, I believed that I wasn't worthy enough and that I was damaged and too much baggage and, you know, because of where I come from. And I had been independent ever since I left, like on my own. So the thought of getting married, I just didn't know if it was going to happen. And then all of a sudden it happened. And I'm really happy and excited.
I'm happy to hear that. I'm glad.
It does feel like I'm finally able to really start enjoying my life. I'm still working on building the life that I want, and I never want to settle. You know, I want to grow and expand my mind as much as I possibly can and keep learning. And I want to have a couple of kids and raise them in a way that I would have wanted to be raised if I had that chance when I had a child, during my childhood. Like, I want my kids to be raised different than I was. So that's definitely something that I'm working on myself so I can provide for my kids the way I want them, the way I want to provide for them.
And I mean, there are a lot of different groups and communities, not only cults and religious groups, but also, I mean, families and societies where people live in a culture or in a group that they feel trapped in. So your story is not only isolated to people who are uncomfortable within the Amish community. I mean, it might even be inspiring for other people who feel stuck in groups or in communities. So if you had the opportunity right now to talk to someone, I mean, to talk directly to someone like a girl who might be like 14 or 15 years old, who feels stuck in her family or feel like they're not able to get out, what would you like to say to her?
Keep trying. Stay motivated and stay consistent with finding the way. There's a lot of doubts that cross people's minds when they want to leave. It was for me so much doubt. And now if I could just tell myself to keep looking forward, don't let those negative thoughts enter your mind. Just one day at a time, keep whittling away at whatever it is that you need to do. Make one step forward. Every single day, do something. It doesn't matter how small it is. It might be try to reach out to somebody for help or save some more money so you have money when you need it. Try to do something to make an extra income and read books. Read a lot of books on I would say read the nonfiction, like true storybooks.
Or listen to podcasts.
Yeah, listen to podcasts. Yes, that too. I recently did start listening to some podcasts. I really didn't hear about podcasts until just this last year in 2019. Is when it feels like everybody now, not everybody, but there's way more podcasts out there than I had ever realized. And I do enjoy listening to some. And if people have access to them, by all means.
So keep trying, save money, and learn.
Learn.
Yeah. So I really hope more people read your book and listen to your story, either through this conversation or one of the interviews you've done. I mean, there's a few on YouTube as well. And get to know and be inspired by your story. I mean, it's both really heartwarming and terrifying and inspiring at once.
Yes. Definitely listen to the Megyn Kelly interview. That was a really cool experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just recently rewatched a video from that show. Mm. And I was like, wow. there were things that, I don't know, it was just really fun. And
I bet.
I know it was a lot of eye-opening things said on there for other people.
Yes.
But still, it was still fun. Good information.
Yeah, and I hope this information and this story reaches more people and raises awareness about these kind of phenomena, not only isolated to Amish culture, but to other groups as well. So I would just want to thank you for being on the How Can We podcast and also being courageous enough to share your story.
Yes, well, thank you for having me. And I wanted to say that my book is available on Amazon. It's called Runaway Amish Girl, The Great Escape.
Thank you.
And I came up with that title myself, so I'm very proud of that book.
Good job.
Because sometimes publishers want to take that away from you, but I was able to keep the one that I had planned on keeping.
Good for you. It's your story.
Right. Mm. And then if anybody has questions or wants to tell me their story, they're welcome to reach out to me on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. I'm on everywhere. And I'd love to hear from people.
Good. I hope they contact you.
I hope so too.
So thank you so much, Emma, for being on the How Can We podcast. I hope we talk to each other soon.
Thank you. I'm glad you invited me to do this. It was fun.
Take care now. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.